Morning. And good morning. So this morning I'm going to give my fifth talk on the Sandokai, which is translated as the harmony of separation and oneness. The harmony of the separation and oneness. And those of you who have programs, you can see what I'm going to be talking about today. But I'll read it. I'm about 80% through the poem, so one or two more talks. So, the theme of the Sandokai is that everything is separate and everything is one. Everything is separate and everything is one. And this is a little bit hard for us to get our arms around, our head around. I guess we can get our arms around it, but our head around. Because the world that we live in is founded in distinction. It's made up of perceptions that feed us and that support our distinctions, that form our distinctions. But that's the world. It's a world of distinctions. And supposedly Buddha said that all conditioned living suffers because of this inherent difficulty in our believing in the ultimate reality of these distinctions. That's why we suffer, because we believe in these distinctions. And we may believe in the distinction that we shouldn't believe in distinctions because we're good Buddhists or something, right? But that's the inherent reason for human suffering. And of course, he's not talking about physical suffering. He's talking about all the other kinds of suffering. So the point of the Sandokai, the point of this poem from the 8th century, is that we can recognize our one-sided thinking, which is all thinking. All thinking, by its very nature, it's one-sided. We can recognize it for what it is. And we can then, recognizing for what it is, learn to dance with the constantly shifting reality that's going on underneath all of our distinctions, or around all of our distinctions, or over all of our distinctions, or through all of our distinctions. That dancing, shifting, moving, unpredictable reality, right? So how to be soft with it, how to be flexible with it. Because we don't really have any choice. Our distinctions will always get us mucked up because they're never going to match what's going on. Because what's going on is new. It's a new pattern. And our old pattern cannot quite ever catch up with it. It's just the way it is. It's human life. It's human existence. And of course, to live, we do this already. To live, we learn to shift, to dance, to let go. And we learn to do it in a somewhat soft and flexible way, or our whole life is just a mess. And sometimes our whole life is a mess. Sometimes our whole life is a mess. Which is neither bad nor good. It's just what is. It's just what is. But it means that we're getting caught in all these distinctions. Instead of just settling into this mess. This mess, if it is a mess, however you want to define it, however you want to talk about it. But when we embrace what is in all of its lack of dependence, we can't count on it, and all of its lack of predictability, when we embrace it, then we can discover some wonder in just what is, some joy in just what is, and some real simplicity. Our discriminating mind forgets how simple things are, how simple it is just to breathe, just to be having a conversation with a friend, just to be looking at the sky, just to be walking to the car, just to be planning my next. It's very simple. It's very simple. But we forget because we're caught by our discrimination. So that's a kind of a the central teaching of the Sandokar. And we may never understand that much. Of course, we want to understand, but we can live it. We can live it. We can live it. in Aikido, and I have never studied Aikido, but my friend in California is, I think he has become an Aikido master now, whatever that means. Like I am a Zen master, whatever that means, right? Interesting discrimination, huh? Interesting distinction. Be careful. So he told me the key to Aikido is soaking in. There's your adversary. Monica is my adversary. And if I want to really defeat Monica, all I need to do is soak into her. All I need to do is soak into her. I just need to breathe with her, to go with her as her body changes, to feel her and feel with her. And then, of course, it's not a question of defeat anymore. There's no defeat. Because then there's movement, then there's dancing, then there's rhythm. It's pretty easy, this human thing, for us to do. But it's very hard for us to do, but it's pretty easy to do if we don't get caught up in all these distinctions. And of course we do get caught up in all these distinctions, but the Sandokai is telling us, come back to just the simplicity of soaking into this moment, to this encounter, to this experience. So now for the phrases for today. In the light there, first I'll read the whole thing for today. In the light there is darkness, but don't see it as darkness. In the darkness there is light, but don't take it as light. Light and dark oppose one another like the front and back foot in walking. So light. Light is the world of discrimination. Light's the world of thoughts and feelings and self and other and ideas and concepts and physical things. Physical things. That's light. Objects outside, objects inside. That's light. And darkness is the opposite. Darkness is oneness. Darkness is beyond any differentiation. Darkness is in Zen. I don't know mind. Don't know mind. Forget the I. Don't know mind. It's going to be total darkness. There isn't any I. It's just don't know. Beyond stupidity. Beyond normal stupidity. Beyond normal mental retardation. Darkness is the opposite. And the Chinese character for in the light there is darkness is in the middle. In the middle. In the middle. So in the middle of light, there is darkness. In the middle of night, light, there is darkness. T.S. Eliot's Still Point of the Turning World, which I talk about a lot. In the middle. In the middle. I'm forgetting to soak in, but when I soak in just for a minute, then there's that stillness. And then there's that darkness. And there's that non-discrimination, which is here in the center of all being. The light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. The Chinese character for don't take it as darkness is don't mark it with the characteristics of darkness. Don't mark it with the characteristics of darkness. So we think there's a thing called darkness, and we mark it with those characteristics. We do a great calligraphy. Or we're Christians and we call it God. Each religion conceptualizes the darkness in a different way, right? But Sekito says, don't mark it with the characteristics of darkness. Don't mark it. Don't mark it. What happens when you mark it with the characteristics of darkness? Well, we get all mixed up. We get all mixed up. And then we want to figure out which is the best version of us, right? Which is the best version. And in the Christian tradition, we're in exile. We're in exile. We're alienated. We're suffering. Because we don't know this God. We don't know this darkness. I don't know about too much about Christianity, but the Christianity that I learned from my grandmother was it's because of our sin. Our sin. Because of our sin we did this, our sinful behavior and our original sin. We've been ripped out of the fabric of the universe, and we have to return to that fabric in Christianity. We're in exile. Well, in Buddhism, what do we say? Yes, we do feel exiled a lot of the time. We feel cut off. We feel like people don't get us, like we've sort of been abandoned. We feel alienated a lot of the time, and we suffer from that. But we haven't been ripped out of the fabric of being. We just got caught in our discriminating mind. We got caught in our categories. We think they're so real, and our thoughts. And all we have to do is soak in to each activity, to each encounter, to each moment, to each breath. That's all we have to do. And we realize we haven't been ripped out of everything. It's all here. It's all here. We haven't been abandoned by God. How could that which is all, everything abandon us? How could it? But we forget. We forget. That's why we do this Zen stuff. That's why we do this Zen sitting. To remember. To remember. To recover. What we have forgotten. Beyond our thinking and feeling is a wider sphere, a huge sphere, in which we're already healed. The world's already healed. Everything's already healed. Because it's one interdependent fabric of vibrating life. Wow! Wow! You don't need to take any drugs. You don't need to do anything. Just breathe into it. Just be what you are already. So what do? And then we sit down, we pay attention, we breathe, and we begin to loosen up around our obsessive compulsive thinking. It doesn't loosen up fast enough, does it? God damn it. When is it going to loosen up? It loosens up when we allow it to loosen up and quit trying to use our discriminating mind to get it to do what it's supposed to do. It's doing what it's supposed to do. All we have to do is sit down, breathe, be present to whatever. This is Buddhist faith. It's not faith in God, but it is faith in God. Because what isn't God? What is God? Name one thing that isn't God. But don't mark it with the characteristics of God, says Sekito. Ooh. Don't mark it with the characteristics of God. That's a pretty good teaching, isn't it? So we allow the world to be created, to create, as we're sitting, as we're walking, as darkness, as light and darkness, as light battling darkness, as no light, as no darkness, right here on our cushions. And people think, oh, that's too trippy. Well, if you stay with it, it's not trippy at all. It's very calm. Very calm. It's just trippy in the head, but in the psyche, it's not trippy. In the big psyche, not trippy. Calm. Composed. Natural composure, you guys. not cultivated composure. Natural. In the darkness there is light, but don't take it as light. Beyond our thinking and feeling is this wider sphere, as I said. Our suffering, our darkness, and now I'm using darkness as suffering. It can be used different ways. If we stay with it on our cushion in our lives, if we just stay with it, if we just breathe into it, what do we discover there? What do we discover there? Timeless joy. Timeless joy. It's not any place else. It's not any place else. It's right here in the deepest, darkest part of our suffering. Timeless joy. And when we're happy and content and everything is light, so light that we're just grooving along, then some great sorrow happens and we can just accept that sorrow. Some great loss of someone or something we love, and we can just be with that. Just be with that. Because in the darkness, in the light, there is darkness. The light can accept darkness. It doesn't have any problem. It doesn't mean we don't grieve. It doesn't mean we don't feel sad. It doesn't mean we don't cry. My cat, who was 18 years old, vanished day before yesterday. She vanished, my crippled cat. And I think she went into a hole to die 3 days ago. And you know, I have a lot of friends, but not most of my friends I don't see every day. I saw my cat every day. Every morning I said hi, I gave her breakfast. She was there to meet me when I came home from work. She went to bed with me. I saw her every day for 18 years. She was I hate to say my best friend, because you're not supposed to say that about animals, and my wife might not like it. But in a way, she was my best friend. She never judged me. She never told me I needed to be different, or that I was alienated from God. Or that I better get my act together. She never told me that I better get my act together. She liked to cuddle. She liked food. She liked to purr. She liked to be stroked. We soaked into each other. She was my best soaking in partner. Excuse me, Linda. That's my wife. My wife's my second best soaking in partner. My wife is staying, though. I hope. I hope. I don't know. Maybe my wife will be gone, too. So this is the human situation. Darkness. But it's within light. It's in whiteness. The discriminating mind wants to go on and on about this being the best cat, never being able to get a good enough cat again, and what she did and what we did and what it'll be like now. Da, 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 da. But why not just be sad? Why not just be grieve and just let it all go? Why not do that? Life is very simple, you guys. Very simple. So the harmony of separation and oneness, we could say, if we want to be scholarly, is an elaboration on Nagarjuna's middle way. But it also includes the earlier middle way in Buddhism. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about both of the middle ways. The earlier middle way in Buddhism, we avoid extremes. We avoid extremes. We avoid too much sleep or not enough sleep. You know this. Always in my life, either I'm getting too much sleep or not enough sleep. But for my sitting and for my life, I need to regulate my sleep. Too much food or not enough food. Too much this or not enough this. That's the middle way in early Buddhism. And that's the focus on modern day Theravada. It's very important. It's not like secondary. If we don't take care of our... And our body is telling us something different all the time. So the middle way is a little different. Once I got my Lyme's disease, my middle way had to be quite different than it was before. It couldn't be my old middle way. I needed to sleep more. It was very important. I can't be here if I don't sleep enough. So your middle way is always changing. But it's the middle between the extremes. And when you get caught by the extremes, you can't practice and you can't enjoy your life. And you can't really soak in because you're just all soaked out through indulgence too much or through denying yourself, self-denial. And Salvador Mnuchin, who was a teacher of psychotherapy, used to talk about engagement. Engagement. That's really the middle way, engagement. Engagement. And he contrasted engagement with enmeshment on the one hand and disengagement on the other hand. And in enmeshment, we don't feel like we can really be ourselves because of our some taboos in our family or something you can't talk about or you'll get put down. That's an enmeshment. And we carry enmeshment a long time, sometimes for our whole lives. I can remember when my mother would come to Minnesota from California and I would be all engaged and then I would see my mother and all of a sudden I would just sort of freeze up because of my childhood memories of enmeshment, of what it wasn't okay to talk about. Enmeshment. And then we go to the other extreme, right? I'm too enmeshed. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to get out of here emotionally. I'm going to get out of here intellectually. I'm going to get out of here physically. I'm going to disengage completely. Completely. And we need that. And that's the fight or flight the amygdala does that I've been talking about, right? The amygdala down here someplace. But our way, Buddhist way, is engagement. Is engagement to see how we get enmeshed, to see how we want to run away from that, and just to stay engaged. Well, sometimes you may have to run away. That's okay. We shouldn't make engagement into this sort of new characteristic that we market with as ultimate reality. But basically, engagement is soft. Engagement sees when we're getting enmeshed and sees when we want to run. And it's as much as possible stays with it and stays engaged. Which, of course, is a lifetime project. That's okay. That's okay, and it's not really a project. It's just life. Just life. So, as many of you know, I direct a nonprofit that has programs for people with mental illness. And every year for the last 4 years, we have brought luminaries into Minnesota to talk about mental illness. Because I have one friend who's a very wealthy woman who pays for them to come. We could never afford to pay for them. But she pays for them to come. And she says, I don't care who, Tim. You bring anybody and I'll pay for it. You know, there are a few people like that in the world. And you just have to have one person like that. We need a friend like that here at Zen Center. So last week we brought in Jane Pauley to talk about her bipolar disorder. And she, as I said, she was the fourth luminary that we brought in 4 years in a row. Well, she was very refreshing, very refreshing. So, you know, since I'm the director, I actually get to know the person if the person wants to get to know me. The other three definitely did not want to get to know me. I do not want to mention them because I don't want to malign them. They did not want to get to know me, you know. They... were a little bit diva-ish. They were pretty disengaged. They wanted to do their gig, get their money, get out of here. They didn't want to go out to dinner with us. They didn't want to do a reception. You know, they were in the God realm, right? I mean, these are really famous people. Jane Pauley was not in the God realm. She was engaged as a human being. I said to Linda after we went out to dinner with her, what you see is what you get, Linda, with her. What you see is what you get. It's so refreshing. When you meet someone like that, aren't you refreshed? Especially someone who's supposed to be famous or a big deal. Isn't it refreshing? Isn't it refreshing? That's the middle way. Just engage. Just engage. Just be who you are. And here she's got this really heavy thing she's talking about, which is her bipolar disorder. That's what we bring her here to talk about. And she engages in conversation about it with lightness, with openness, without a hint of shame or me bad or I shouldn't talk. And wonderful. And she's probably not even a Buddhist, although she is a Buddhist. She just doesn't know it. She's a non-Buddhist Buddhist, which is the best kind. That's the very best kind. So the second middle way moves one step beyond the first middle way, because we're getting it pretty advanced when you move into Nagarjuna and the Sandokai. But be careful of that. Be careful of marking it with a characteristic of advancement, right? And that middle way says, the more darkness, the more lightness. The more emptiness, the more form, in the Heart Sutra. That's what that middle way says. So not in between. In between, on the extremes, everywhere. Not in between. The more this, the more that. So my friend who went to California years ago to see my teacher Suzuki Roshi, she wasn't my friend then actually, but she told me about it later. She was doing a retreat in San Francisco, and one day in the retreat she got up from her seat and she saw Suzuki's eyes as he got up from his seat across the room. And she looked into his eyes and she said, there was nothing there. She said, there was nothing there. There was just space. Just space. And she said, then I looked around the room and everything I saw seemed vivid and alive, the way I had not remembered things being vivid and alive, in a way I had never seen them before. The more darkness, the more light. The more emptiness, the more form. And before that, she had really been struggling in her retreat with all kinds of darkness. All kinds of, I'm not good enough, I can't do this, blah, 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 blah. This is stupid because he doesn't give us any instruction except sitting against the wall, facing the wall, da 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 da. But she stayed with it. She stayed with it. So Nagarjuna's middle way, we collapse the opposites. We collapse the middle. And we embrace the opposite. We embrace the middle. Because it's what is. We're not caught by distinctions. We're not caught by them. But we use them. We still need to engage. The first middle way is very important. That's why the Sandokai emphasizes both. It emphasizes separation. We're separate individuals. Enmeshment is not oneness. It's confusion. It's not oneness. It's primitive. Very primitive. And of course, we are primitive too. That's okay. Just see it. Just see it. So in religious communities, I'll talk about this a little later. I'm going to talk about this next, the last phrase first. The last phrase. Light and dark oppose one another, like the front and back foot in walking. Well, that's pretty cool, really, if you think about it. The front and back steps are always feet are always switching. They're always switching. Which is the front? Which is the back? We don't know. We don't know. And yet there is a front and there is a back, but they're always switching. So when Sekito wrote this, it's the 8th century in China, and as I said in one of my earlier talks, the Zen school has just been started and already they're in conflict. Already they're in conflict. The minute it starts, they're in conflict. The minute this end starts, we've got the Northern School and the Southern School competing with each other. Like me and Steve competing with each other. Only Steve's laid up in bed with a heart attack now. So, but I went to visit him the other day. He is doing better. I tried to soak in as best I could. As best I could. Light and dark oppose one another, like the front and back foot in walking. So these sectarian disputes they had in the 8th century, and that we always have, which one is the most sophisticated? Which is the most effective? Which form of Buddhism? Which form of meditation? Which is the truest? That's what we really care, something true, right? Which is the truest one? And of course, the history of Buddhism is like this. I haven't given this little spiel for a few years, but some of you memorize it. History of Buddhism is like this. We have the Atman, pre-Buddhism, the Atman. What? What's the Atman? It's the still point in here. It's timeless. It's open. It's available. And then we have Buddha coming along. What's he say? No Atman. Because they've turned it into a thing. They've turned it into something that some people can get. Some people have got more of than others. They've forgotten. They've marked it with a characteristic of the Atman. So Buddha said, no Atman. No Atman, right? Big teaching. Then what do we have? The big birth of Mahayana. What happens? We have something just creeping up a little bit. First, oh, Buddha. Buddha nature. Oh, everyone has Buddha nature. Everyone has Buddha nature. Oh, yes, all beings have Buddha nature. It's the center of being. It's still. It's timeless. It's open. Sounds like Atman, doesn't it? All the Buddhist scholars say, no, no, it's not like Atman. And you read 32 pages about why it's not like Atman. Sounds like Atman to me, you guys. And we have the Chinese Zen guys coming along. No Buddha nature. Moo. The dog doesn't have Buddha nature, neither do you. No Buddha nature. No Buddha nature. No Buddha nature. Okay? Then we have Dogen coming along. Well, Dogen says, Dogen gets his own take on it. Well, he acknowledges that first there is Atman. Everything has the Atman. Then the Atman is made up. There's no Atman. No one has the Atman. And then everything has the Buddha nature. And then Joksho and the others, no Buddha nature. And now he says everything is the Buddha nature. Oh, that's Dogen. Clever guy, huh? Well, now we need another iteration, right? Because this is our human tendency to glom onto these things and make religions out of them instead of fully live, completely live. And my friend Fulton, in the fifth grade, introduced me to butterflies. In where I grew up, we had lots and lots of what do we have? We had monarch butterflies, we had swallow butterflies, swallowtail butterflies, we had painted ladies, we had lots and lots of butterflies. It was wonderful in the spring when I grew up. I'm sure the butterflies are still here in the city, but I don't see them. All the time I saw them. But then he wanted to show me his butterfly collection. But even in the fifth grade, I didn't feel good when I saw his butterfly collection. All the butterflies were dead. They were pinned down. They were labeled. They lost their life. I just wanted to run outside and be with the butterflies. Just be with the butterflies. That's all we have to do. We are our own human beings. We don't have to be like butterflies. As we dance, as we live in the world, we are human butterflies. We don't have to pin stuff down after we chloroform it. We're always chloroforming our experience because it's too painful. And then we're pinning it down. We don't have to. We have a choice to engage. To engage. The first middle way. To engage. So that we can know the second middle way. So all approaches are part of our walking. All these approaches. The northern school, the southern school, Buddha nature, no Buddha nature, God, atheism, they're all part of our walking. Can we disagree with one another and make judgments and discrimination? Which is part of life, to disagree with. That's the separate part. We disagree. It's okay to disagree. Make judgments and discriminations and even argue without bitterness, without getting pinned down, without wanting to chloroform ourselves. We can do that. We can do that. We can engage. We can engage without forgetting oneness. That's not that easy, but it's not that hard. It's not that hard. That's what Sandokaya is all about. That's what the harmony of separation and oneness is all about. Religious communities, and we are a religious community, whether we like it or not, we are a religious community. Religious communities coalesce around some ideal of goodness. And you know what happens? We get enmeshed. We got enmeshed in our family, and we repeat that enmeshment in religious communities. We do it. Human beings do it. Because there's this ideal of goodness, this ideal of calmness or spaciousness, or what it is, or God, or sinfulness, or whatever. And we want to avoid conflict. We don't feel comfortable with disagreement. So we need to pay attention to that. We need to pay attention to that, about that coalescence. And often what happens in religious communities is exactly the same thing that happens in families. So I was so enmeshed with my family, I didn't even know it till much later, right? I didn't know it, that I had to move halfway across the country. Talk about disengagement. From Palo Alto to northern Minnesota, if that ain't disengagement, what is? But I didn't know anything about that. I was just going to the beautiful wild north, right? But then after that, I began to, with my zazen and with the help of Buddha no Buddha, I began to really engage with those people that I'd left behind, to really engage with them, to really try to join them. And I could see when I'd get enmeshed and I'd have to come back. This is part of our dance. This is part of our Aikido that we do. And so in religious communities too, people get all hepped up, all involved. I got to get out of here. And then they go. We don't see them again. Maybe we never see them. Or maybe they come back and they engage. Maybe they've gone through that disengagement and they're ready to engage. And they really bring health to the community when they engage, when they don't hang on to enmeshment or disengagement. They bring great health. Great health. They're great teachers for all of us. And of course, we want to disengage because people are doing us wrong. And people here in this Zendo are supposed to be spiritual, and yet they're always doing us wrong. They do bad stuff. They do mean, nasty stuff. So we want to disengage. But everybody who does a mean and nasty thing, as Norman Fisher says in one of his talks, had a mama, was born as a baby, came out, had childhood, grew up, and is doing their best in their own way. Just doing their best in their own way. So light and dark oppose one another, like the front and back foot in walking. Separation and oneness. Maybe we can't grasp this. Maybe we can't understand this. You know, I had to read the Sandokai so many times before I could say, how can I even talk about this thing? I mean, I got it kind of, but I couldn't talk about it. Do you know what I mean? I could maybe paint, but not talk about it. Easy to paint it. Not in a representative way, but a non-representational. We won't get into that. So maybe we won't be able to grasp and understand it, because it's always changing. Everything's always changing. But we can live. We can live. By what? Soaking in and engaging. There are really two components to the best Aikido master, my friend told me many years ago, that he or she both knows how to soak in and engage. Know when to soak in and know when to engage. And of course, sometimes we do bad steps. We soak in when we should be engaging, and our partner says, come on, you're being a wet rag. Do some leadership around here. Sometimes we engage when we really need to be soaking in, to feeling the person, to feeling where their body's at, where their life's at, where their heart's at. And life is nothing but that rhythm, And the Sandokai is nothing but that rhythm. Soaking in, engaging, engaging, soaking in. And falling down lots of times into enmeshment, into disengagement, but they're just coming back. And the coming back itself is already the dance. So it's not some perfect dance, you guys. You can be an awful dancer and get this. you can be an awful dancer and look just fine. Because then you are full of awe when you dance, right? You're full of awe. You can't do it. You can't do it. You're full of awe. Just that she will be my partner. It makes me full of awe. In all my awkwardness, he'll be my partner. Wow, what a deal. How could I want anything more than that? That he'll be my dancing partner in all my awkwardness. Harmony of separation and oneness. Okay, that's what I want to say for today, and be glad to take questions or comments or stories or songs or arguments. Arguments. Ben.
Could you just talk a little bit more about the distinction maybe between engagement and enmeshment?
Oh, sure. Well, in an enmeshed situation, we don't want to speak out and be different from people. Because if we do, we think we're bad, or someone's going to think we're weird, or someone's going to tell us we're out of place. We're enmeshed. We're entangled. We're in AA parlance, we're codependent, but we're codependent on this entire family. So we just can't be ourselves in this family. We just have to always be taking care of them, and we get all entangled. We don't have a separate self anymore. And there's no time for us to have a separate self because I'm dealing with my mom's alcoholism, and then my father's rejecting me, and I'm trying to be cool with him, and I can't be myself. I can't be myself. And then we run. We run. We flee to booze, to northern Minnesota, to writing, you know. We flee. I'm out of here, honey. I want to have a self. I'm a separate human being. I need to be who I am. Life is short. I can't put up with this. We disengage. It's a human situation. But is it possible? And of course it is. To notice this, to notice the disengagement, and then come back. But when we come back, we're not all entangled anymore. We haven't lost our authentic voice. We experiment with our authentic voice, just with that alcoholic mother and that distant father. We use that authenticity, but we still pay attention to them. We still soak in with them. We need to soak in with them, but not get overwhelmed and get enmeshed so that no separation is tolerated. Lots of religious communities, no separation is tolerated. You're the bad kid. Lots of families, there's a bad kid. There's a bad parent. Oh, I don't want to be the bad kid. I don't want to be the bad parent. I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to get along and smile and be one with everything. That's enmeshment. That's not the oneness in the sun. Has no relationship with the oneness of the Sandokai. Zero relationship. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It seems like when Dogen talked about getting entangled in a twining vine,
yeah.
It seems to me like he's talking about
enmeshment.
How do you?
Wanda. That's very good. So Dogen, who is a deep guy and also a very clever guy, and says that, as Wanda's saying, he talked. There's a little time to talk about this. So in Chinese Zen thought, discriminating mind is considered entangling vines, and the Chinese Zen teachers all say you need to free yourself from the entangling vines. You need to cut off the entangling vine so you can really live. And then Dogen, being the smart ass that he is, excuse me, he's very wise, but he's also a smart ass, as I may be sometimes. But you've got to be careful about this, right? Dogen says, oh, entangling vines. Wonderful. We should make our nest in entangling vines. We should learn and appreciate entangling vines. We should wear entangling vines. So Dogen is collapsing the duality that exists between entangling vines and openness and stillness. He's doing a second middle way job. He's doing a Nagarjuna job. He's collapsing it. He said, well, you get some idea of enmeshment. You're caught by that idea, and then you want to stay away from that enmeshment. That's yucky. But you're very, and that's disengagement. The farther the more you stay away from enmeshment, the more you disengage. And if you go right into the enmeshment with your still open mind, you can just engage with it. You can return to that family where everything is messed up and just be there. You're not beatific. Forget about being beatific. Forget about it. It won't happen in this lifetime. And if it does, it won't happen for long. Forget about it. Forget about it. Go back to the enmeshment and find your engagement there. Find your openness and your joy and your simplicity by not buying into it. Because you don't have to, because those people aren't who you are. Their dysfunction isn't who you are. But it is who you are. It's what everything is. It's just not who you are, ultimately. That's what everything is, entangled. But we, right in the middle of entanglement, we can be free. Just as I was saying earlier in the talk, right in the middle of our deepest darkness, that's where we find the light. That's where we find the openness. That's where we find a wonderful joy. A wonderful joy. Does that deal with it?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Something about attachment in the context of engagement and enmeshment and entanglement.
Something about attachment. Well, you know, we all get attached, and of course, attachment's a bad word in Buddhism. You know, we want to get rid of our attachment. But, you know, I'm probably going to be grieving for my cat for the next 5 years. That's attachment, I think. So I'm, you know, I prefer to use the term disidentification. But maybe it's just semantics. But to me, it feels better. Because we're attached to things we love. As Dogen says when he talks about weeds and flowers, we're attached to the flowers. We don't like the weeds. But we can disidentify with those. In an enmeshed world, we identify those. Those make us feel whole. I needed that cat to feel okay. But in an open world, we disidentify. I see the grieving coming up. I see the grieving for my wonderful friend Snow. And I really want to find her body. I can't find her body, you guys. I'm going all around the neighborhood looking for her body. When I'm home, I'm going to go all around again. I'm a silly man, aren't I? We're silly men. We're men and women. We're silly human beings. Can't we just be silly? Can't we just be silly? It's okay. But we disidentify. We let go. It doesn't become our who we are, because who we are is Sandokai, the harmony of oneness and separation. Is that helpful?